James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
So, here I sit at the Guy James Show desk in the Guy James Show studio with all this electronic equipment setting around, a big mixer on my one side, a big 12-channel mixer, and three screens in front of me, a Comrex Stack 6 phone system, recording devices, you name it, it's all here. And I'm sitting here thinking, my, what a nice studio. We've got soundproofing on the walls, we got wild colors, you know, state-of-the-art stuff. And I'm sitting here admiring this right before the show comes on. I'm on the chat room. ELO and I are throwing back and forth a little bit of banter about the phone. And it's time for the show to start. It comes up 3 o'clock on the atomic clock. And I thought, you know, after about, what, 30 seconds, a minute, maybe I ought to turn on the streamer. Oh, my. It's been a long day. So, sorry about that faux pas to start off the program. I would sit here and blame an engineer or more likely a producer or a board op, but it'd be me, and it'd be my fault, and I did it. So, guilty as charged. Hey, how are you today? Are you, wherever you are you warm? I think even if you're here in Florida, you're not really warm today. My God, some of the temperatures I'm seeing around, as is my wont to do, I check in on Ohio every day, being a former Buckeye, and I always look at the Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati weather map, and I see they're down around the zero mark, a couple of degrees above zero for a high, maybe one tomorrow high, and they got loads of snow all around the place. And invariably, that dips down south here. Whenever you folks get the terrible cold weather up there, it kind of, you know, infringes upon the palm trees and so forth around here. And it's bright chilly around here today. It's like a high of maybe 65. It was in the high 40s last night. Hey, how would you like to spend all that money to come south on a vacation and you can't go to the beach? So we hope it doesn't last too long, 2 or 3 days. That's what we usually get here in Florida. 2, maybe 3 days of winter every year. That's about it. Where it's, you know, in the 40s. Even a couple of times it's dipped into the 30s since I've lived here in a dozen years. Very seldom ever gets like this, but nice day nonetheless. Here I'm talking about weather. I ought to put my glasses on. I can't see a thing. There we go. Now I can see my notes. It's hard enough to read my notes with glasses, let alone without glasses. Some sort of chicken scratching. Are you that way? I have gotten just terrible since I started using computers years ago. Just terrible. My handwriting. And it never was anything to write home about. That's for certain. I wanted to say that right up front. I was never proud of my penmanship. Frankly, I never give a damn. It's just something that wasn't all that important to me. As long as you could read it and understand it, that was good enough. I could prove my artistic abilities in other ways. But I have noticed that as time has gone on, I am less and less able to write well, and I think it's just because I can type far, far faster than I can write. And I think I try and maybe write too fast, and I just scribble. Do some of you do that? Have you noticed a tendency in your handwriting to go down the tubes when you type everything all day? You're sitting in front of a keyboard. They made fun of me in high school. The guys did because the bus driver, I rode school bus every day, and the bus driver taught the business classes. And, of course, it was all girls that took the business classes back in those days. Particularly typing in shorthand. And I mentioned to the bus driver one day, who was our business teacher, that his classes were a bunch of weenie classes. Well, he challenged me to take typing. And so I did. Yes, I did. I took typing and learned to type the proper way, and am I glad I ever did. Worked my way through to school that way, charging other guys for term papers in college, back in those days, 10 cents a page. But I learned to type very well, and am I ever glad I did. You know, it's odd all these years later to say that typing is one of the more valuable things I think I ever took in school. And something you don't forget either. It's like I say, riding a bike. You really don't forget. Well, there's the friendly banter of the day. I don't know how I got started on that. I do want to say thanks to Kinfei down to the Fort Myers News Press newspaper. Went down there last night for this photo shoot. I really thought for the newspaper, because Sunday they're having a feature article on people here locally going to the inauguration, and yours truly was invited down to get a picture taken. I thought it would be a typical newspaper mugshot, and went in last evening to the newspaper and met one of the nicest gentlemen I think I've ever met in my life. So impressive. Kinfei, if you're listening, and I doubt you are an exemplary human being. My God, what a nice guy this guy was. Anyway, turned out to be quite a deal. One of those persons that sits there and really takes his work seriously and talks to you, and you don't pose, you just talk, and he starts taking pictures. And I don't think I've ever had a picture that I was satisfied with, and I think a lot of you are the same way. I had that brought up to me today that just about everybody's that way. Don't have any pictures they're really satisfied with, don't think we're photogenic. But, gotta say, I liked a couple of his pictures that I saw. Wow. I told him he's made the proverbial silk purse out of a sow's ear in this case, so happy for that. And we also were introduced today to the local newspaper blog. They are having a couple of us, the head of the local Democratic Party and myself, and maybe somebody else, I don't know, but we're going to do blogging from the inauguration, give our viewpoints and our experiences on there, and that'll be on the Fort Myers News Press blog page. So all of you millions around the world want to www.news-press on Sunday, it's going to be there. Well, I'm going to start blogging tonight on there anyway. And we're going to give them some live coverage from the inauguration as well. We're going to be talking to them and give them a little bit of information on what's taking place in Washington. Looking forward to it. I was worried about this cold weather. Not too much, because I don't get really cold. You put me out in that for half hour, 45 minutes or so, I don't care. I'm just one of those. But I was worried maybe that zero stuff would head to Washington, but evidently it's not going to. The 10-day forecast in the District of Columbia still looks like it's going to hold steady, going to be in the mid to low to high 30s for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday even, and very little chance of precipitation. So it looks good. I'll tell you, this whole inauguration thing is really starting to rock. I'm having a good time with all this. I really am. So I get an email, and I'm sure he won't mind me passing this on to you. Scott, who wrote the really cool song, sang last couple of weeks ago about the shoes. Scott has, and Scott's in Sweden, by the way, as you know, many of the listeners. Scott's got shoes on the brain, I'm afraid. Yes, he does. And he writes an email, and Scott, I hope you don't mind me sharing this with everybody, but he writes an email that says, Guide to make money, to really make money, dust off your old idea of a month ago. Dress Bob up. He's talking about Bob Kincaid, leader of the pack here on the Head On Radio Network. Dress Bob up as Bush. Have him stand behind a podium that you two lug onto the site, and charge $1 a throw per shoe. You'll need a gopher or two to be fetching the shoes, but if you do this in front of a wall or some sort to keep the projectiles fairly well connected in one place, collected in one place, it's all manageable. And have the horn banner prominent and a lockbox. I'm betting you guys could make thousands. I'm serious about this. Well, I thought about it for a moment, And I came to my senses, and I wrote back to Scott. I said, Scott, this is never going to work because of, think about it, people with steel-toed shoes and heavy boots this time of year with big old heels on them, flinging them at poor Bob. You could get killed. People have a few drinks, they're gonna heave those things, and there stands poor Bob, in the firing line. So Scott writes back, and he says, all right, we'll tone this down a little bit, we'll use slippers. And so I write back and says, it's still not gonna work because this is the reason it won't work, Scott. Bob is the best radio guy I know. He's got a great voice, he's got a quick wit. He's extremely well-informed on almost any issue that you can name. He knows all the really cool Southern-style colloquialisms and such. The guy's really good at what he does. Really good. But if he can imitate Bush, he belongs in Hollywood, not Beckley, West Virginia. I mean, he might be Lowell Thomas and Delilah and Edward R. Murrow all rolled into one, but he ain't no Clint Eastwood. Sorry, Bob. I thought that would end the whole thing, but it didn't. Scott writes back, being ever willing to press on, but Guy, he'll be wearing a mask and you will have spiked his morning coffee with a good Kentucky rye. Tell him you'll give him Velveeta melted on grits as his reward. And so I wrote back, Scott, checkmate, you got me. The Velveeta's going to do it. Sorry, Bob. I had to laugh at your expense. It was fun. Scott's got a great sense of humor. And I trust Bob does as well. yes. But I meant all the comments. Tonight won't be just any night. Man, that's a fact. Junior Bush is going to give his farewell address tonight. Now, this probably won't be anything as eloquent as anything written by, say, Alexander Solzhenitsyn or Hemingway or anything like that. Remember, if you took the Gettysburg Address and gave it to Junior Bush, imagine what he would do with that. Believe me, if the Gettysburg Address had been delivered by Junior Bush, it would be nowhere in the history books today. I think you all know that. So that gives us an idea of what to expect tonight from Junior. It'll be, have you noticed these little quirks that he has when he speaks? I suppose we all have some, one type or another. But Junior does a lot of sniffing when he talks. Have you noticed that? Maybe it's the old cook. Well, I don't want to go there. But he'll talk along and say, and I told him that I'm going to, and purses his lips. Watch him tonight. He'll do that a lot. He'll purse his lips. And, of course, just like his mother, his mouth turns down at the side. And he's given that sniff thing. And he looks ridiculous, as always. Kind of like his mom. A woman that I have spoken about a time or two. So that's coming up tonight. That's really something to look forward to. Get your peanut popcorn and cracky Cracker Jacks and get ready to say goodbye to Junior Bush tonight. That's the last we'll probably hear of him. Unless O'Meara calls him and asks him to do something else, maybe send over some fighter jets, American fighter jets, and attack Gaza or something. O'Meara might probably, I shouldn't say ask Bush to do it, order him to do it. That's the relationship between Israel and the United States and this administration. So it may well be the last words in the public media that we hear from Junior Bush tonight. I hope so. I hope that whenever his little farewell to arms speech is done tonight, that is the last time I will ever hear his voice. It just grates on me. Just grates on me. So we've got that to look forward to later on tonight. I think I'm going to miss it. I'll have to watch the tape a little later on. I wouldn't want to completely miss it. And, of course, we had the vision this afternoon of Dick Cheney swearing in now Illinois Senator, Junior Senator Roland Burris, Blagojevich's nominee for the United States Senator. Senate. He was sworn in by Cheney this afternoon, got a rousing round of applause from his fellow senators. I don't think I've ever seen anybody quite as anxious to be a United States Senator as Roland Burris. Man, he's just a hop, skip, and a jump into D.C. and couldn't wait to... And, you know, I think we all knew after that first day, we knew he'd be seated sooner or later. Harry Reid, as is his style, huffed and puffed and then quit. I suppose the law is on Blagojevich's side, and if it is, why so be it. And they couldn't find a way around it. I think the inevitability of it caught up with them, and they felt they had to seat him. And let's hope he's a good senator. I certainly hope so. He's taken the place of a great one. And actually, a man who wasn't in the Senate, imagine a junior senator getting elected and being elected president of the United States. But I think Kennedy was a junior senator when he was elected president as well. So kind of a stepping stone. I think there are probably 100 United States senators who see themselves sitting in the Oval Office. That's always been one of the things with them. The Senate is a good job. Don't let there be any doubt about that. Hey, deviating from the subject for a moment, how do you folks keep up with this Facebook stuff? I answered one or two of those, you know, and signed up on there. I don't know how you keep up with it. Man, do those things come rolling in fast. I don't know. I don't know how. Anyway, maybe someone will give me a tip or two on that. And the inauguration is going to pose some security risk. There are some, 20,000 police from around the United States and Washington, D.C., at a minimum, going to be there to provide security, and I'm happy about that. I'll be in that crowd. Bob will be in that crowd. And that's good to know that there will be a lot of security. I hope it doesn't end up being a terrible nightmare going through security. We will pass through security several times, but it will, whatever it is. A couple of million people now. They've backed the predictions down. At first they were saying 4 million people, and you still hear that thrown around. I don't think it will approach 4 million, because I don't think the area will handle 4 million people. I don't know that it's really possible. You'd have to fill up Mass Avenue, Connecticut, you'd really have the entire mall. I don't know. Pennsylvania Avenue. I'm going to say 2.2, 2.3 million tops. That's what I'm going to say. And the only way they're going to know, the Park Service is not allowed to give estimates anymore. Who was it? Farrakhan, I think it was, threatened to sue him when he had that million-man march, and the cops, the park police said there was only 400,000 people there, and there were several times that many. At least that's what Farrakhan said, and he threatened to sue him. I don't know what the reason was, the basis for the suit, but anyways, since that time, the park police haven't given any crowd size estimates, and they probably will not this week, too, but somebody else will do it. But I'm going to say that it's probably more realistic to say just a bit over 2 million. It's going to be tight. It's going to be crowded. It's going to be festive. It's going to be rambunctious. It's going to be trying people's patience sometimes, I'm sure. But nonetheless, it's going to be the place to be. Around 2 million, 2.1 million, that's what I'm saying, and I'll count them. I'll get Bob to help me. We'll count them. And we'll have to count fast, but I think we can get them all in. I always wasn't too bad at predicting crowd sizes, because I was used to going to college football games, you know, big ones, with big stadiums. And I always kind of looked at a section, okay, that's about a section of Ohio Stadium there. And That's about a section of Ohio Stadium there, you know, 100,000 at a time. And, you know, I don't know, you can get pretty good at predicting the size of a crowd. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program today. 866-546-5254. I watched a moment or two of the Senate hearings on Hillary Clinton becoming Secretary of State of the United States, and they voted, the committee voted, it ended up 16-1 today in favor of confirming her in the committee. Anyway, it'll go to the full Senate now. I'll be anxious to see what the vote is. Orrin Hatch, big shot Republican, has come out actually and just pretty much stated that he's in favor of all of the Obama nominees. And if Orrin Hatch says that, you know that there's not going to be too much of a struggle. They wouldn't dare, really. They wouldn't dare. When you've just taken a real ass kicking like they have, and you're flat on your back politically, maybe it's better not to make a whole lot of waves about this. There'll be a few. For example, that idiot, what's his nickname? Diaper Dave, Dave Vitter of Louisiana, senator. He's the one that voted against Hillary Clinton. 16-1. He was the lone opposing vote. And, of course, he's very interested in Bill Clinton's money collection for his charity enterprises. That's a big thing to Vitter. Big thing. Several of the Republicans raised that issue, but Vitter's the one that voted against her. Doesn't it make you wonder, David Vitter, Diaper Dave, how in the world could a guy like that ever get elected to an office? I mean, he's a dud to start out with. And then this deal with the diapers and the dominatrix and all that in Louisiana, and he's going to have to come up for election again, and you know he'll get reelected. You know he will. Maybe that's normal behavior by, you know. Of course, Louisiana does have quite a reputation with some politicians down there. Governor Edward Edwards and Huey Long. And, of course, Vitter. I'll never forget the sight of him standing there with his wife at his side. What was her name? The woman that was going to go to jail over that? The prostitute, Deborah Jean Pelfrey? Pelfrey? Woman who hung herself over it? She lived somewhere here in Florida with her mother when she died. I think up in the Tampa, St. Pete area up in there someplace. She hung herself in a tool shed or something outside of her mom's double wide. Because she didn't want to go to jail over this, she was the one going to jail. Isn't that unfair? Isn't that terribly unfair? Woman was going to go to jail on kind of prostitution or whatever charge it was they had up against her. And here's Vitter, her diaper dandy boy client. And he's sitting in the United States Senate. Something really smells about that, you know. There's something just not quite right about that, but isn't that the way it always is? I feel sorry for ladies of the evening many times. You find out they end up going to jail, and the big shot Johns, whose names are in their little black books and all that, why, nothing ever happens to them. I mean, and here we had Vitter. I can't imagine. Now, can you imagine? This makes me wonder about the psyche of some of our politicians and people in, you know, in the gentry here in this country, to have that come out about you, that you had purchased the services of a dominatrix and you wore diapers and liked to be submissive to this dominatrix woman, and be in the United States Senate and have that all over the TV, I just can't imagine ever showing my face again. Can you? I can't. I mean, I know you got to move on. I know forgive and forget and all that sort of thing. Forgive, yes. How could you ever forget that? Yeah. So anyway, the woman who was the victim in the case, this Deborah Jean Pelfrey, whatever her name was, she hung herself over in Vitter's, living the high life in the United States Senate. Well, That's how it goes. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. We're kind of going to feature Josh Ritter today. Josh, one of my favorite artists, not very well known, but I like a lot of his stuff, and so we're going to play some of it today. Won't be all Josh Ritter, but a little bit anyway. One of my favorite tunes from him. Me and Jigs.
Station wagon laying foundations on the shadows blowing past the flames. But I'm feeling good. 7 o'clock, we're gonna drive up the county line. Find a Saturday night like an orphan child and the good days left behind. Well, I'm not sure we can stay. Sun's going down.
Josh Ritter, Me and Jigs. I love that song. Love it. I don't think it ever got anywhere in the charts, but should have. It's a nice tune. I like the guy. I played a song about a month ago, and I hate to admit this, being a real music aficionado. Not on all genres, but especially folk and classical and that area. And Americana. And I heard a song about a month ago that I played, and I got a lot of response on it, and I haven't played it since, and to be honest, I've been a bit lazy and didn't do research on this tune. But I wonder if all of you had heard this song. I'm telling Bob, it's a little bit of a downer, but it's a haunting melody and lyrics, and I'm going to play that for you right now. Hard Times Come Again No More. Is this a Southern classic to those of you who live in the South? I'm not from the South, but the first time I heard this song, I loved it. Loved it.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many. Sorrow with the poor.
I love that piece of music. It's a little bit of a downer. It's a sad story. As the many of you who are not on the chat room right now know, Stephen Foster wrote that. Also wrote, you know, Way Down Upon the Suwannee River and many other Southern classic songs. But I am surprised that I'd never heard that until recently, and I've kind of learned it a little bit, and I do like it. I wonder how you feel about it. Anyway, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Is gasoline going up in your area? It has here about close to 30 cents a gallon, and the odd part about that is oil went up a little bit and then back down. It's really crashed. I think it's around $34 today. So I have to wonder what's up with that gas going up 30 cents a gallon. Of course, if there's a way to squeeze it out of us, they will. What is it in your state? Those of you in the chat room, let me know how much is gasoline in your area. Isn't this something we're talking about cheap gas at $1.59? Those of us that are a little older than some of the rest of you, don't get me started. Don't get me started on the nickel cokes and the nickel ice cream cones. And any of the rest of you remember when you could get a great big scoop of, you know, premium hard ice cream just dripping with butterfat for a nickel, 7 cents? Anybody else remember that? Good old days. Gas is, or ice cream is outrageous today, price of it. How do you get to talking about ice cream anyway? I don't know. I was going to stay away from difficult subjects today just to have an upbeat day for a change, but it's difficult. Maybe not as difficult as it has been in the past because we have something to really look forward to next week. And I know the banter is starting. They don't like this about Obama and don't like that about Obama. And I heard somebody say a while back, and I'll use it to pertain to myself, the only person I've ever agreed with 100% on politics is myself. And probably many of you feel the same exact way. And so I know full well that I won't agree with Barack Obama on everything he does. I won't agree with him on every issue, on every appointment. That's impossible. We just hope to come out with the majority of things that we want for the good of the nation. and that he recognizes what is good for the nation. And I think we're off to a good start. The naysayers have started in and hammering away at him already. This clown, this David Fitter, who really, in the broad scheme of things, really does not matter. But the naysayers are getting ready. They're sharpening their knives, sharpening their teeth. The Hannitys, the Limbaughs, the Ann Coulters, people like that. They're going to go after him mercilessly. And to be fair, I will be fair. I have, and many of us on the left have gone after Bush mercilessly. Not necessarily from day one. But whenever he's screwed up, I've been right there to say so, and don't mind saying so, and I never felt we needed to be polite about it. I think we needed to point out shortcomings of any president, any president. We had just been through 8 years of pathological, I believe sometimes, hatred toward Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton stuck his foot in the trap that was laid for him. And paid the price for it. And so we'd been through a bitter, bitter time during the last portion of Bill Clinton's administration. And I think a lot of people were tired of that, tired of the fighting, tired of the accusations and the public hanging of Bill Clinton and all that. And so I think Bush did get a little bit of a honeymoon. He really did. And then 9/11 came along, and his approval rating went up to something like, I don't know, 88-90%. Please count me in those that never, ever, under any circumstances, approved of him. Because I felt even when all the flag waving and the jingoistic terms were flying about, and everybody's driving around with the little plastic flags on their cars, and bring home God bless our troops, ribbons, plastic ribbons on the back of their cars, the stick-ons, you know what I'm talking about. All during that whole era, I still did not approve of what George Bush was doing for America. I never thought going into Iraq was a good idea, like most of you. And I can say most of you because I know who my audience is. I know that any right-wingers listening only do it for sport. Hopefully we can train a few of them, and we have in the past. We've heard from some that have had a little bit of a political epiphany. We hear that now and then. If an epiphany is something that really and truly does happen to anybody, I was thinking about that today. Do I know anybody, and we've heard people talk about these life-changing experiences, and I've heard people claim to have life-changing experiences. One of the most prominent ones that I can remember is George Wallace. George Wallace, a man with bitter hatred in his heart toward African-Americans. And before he died, he claimed to have had an epiphany, and I don't know why that he claimed that of it. I never felt it was genuine. I don't know what's in a man's heart. But from appearances, it just never seemed to me to be real. Do you know anybody who has had a true epiphany and turned their lives around and become a really different person, accepted a whole new set of values and standards in their life that they didn't have before? Do you know anybody like that? I don't think I do. I've seen people do it briefly. I've seen people have, you know, religious experiences and so forth. Conversions. Born-again experiences, all that. And live differently for a while. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody completely turn their lives around. Just become a completely different person. Go from somebody who's not liked, who's not admired, who's not respected, and turn into a model citizen. I know it happens. I just haven't known anybody. They say something about a leopard not able to change their spots. I'm a little bit that way, that I think that maybe it's not possible for somebody to change. I guess I have to have it proven to me. Why did I start that conversation? Really wasn't a conversation, a statement by me. 866-546-5254 here on the Head On Radio Network. Can't let the day go by without talking about Israel and the abomination that's taking place in the Gaza Strip and the subjugation, you might as well say, that has been taking place over the last few years of the people in that area. I don't think a lot of people understand, and please don't misunderstand when I talk about this, and isn't it a shame we always have to put a caveat on anything we say about Israel? Shouldn't have to. They're no different than anybody else. Oh, they'll scream when I say that even. But I always have to put a caveat on when we say anything about Israel. And say, oh, no, the Palestinians, Hamas, they've been lobbing bombs at us and rockets at us. Okay, that's true. That's true. Nobody approves of that. Nobody approves of that. That's wrong. That's just plain wrong. But are you going to go in and kill a whole population on account of that? Are you going to go in and bomb men, women, and children who are innocent on account of that? Oh, yes, there are collateral damage in a war. Here's Israel once again thumping their chest. You will not lob rockets at us. Do you know that a lot of people that live in those towns close by where these rockets are being lobbed, do you know that a lot of people in Gaza lived in those towns? That was their homeland. That were their homes. Their land, their farmland, and they got thrown out of it by the Israelis and put behind fences and cement walls in Gaza? I don't know, but I think I would be a little bit bitter over that myself. Don't know if it would come to the point of lobbing rockets at innocent people on the other side, but I can understand the bitterness. I do. Doesn't make it right. But, anyway, it's still going on. They're talking about a ceasefire. They're talking about a truce, maybe something to get this carnage stopped. But here we have Israel, and I'm sure all of you remember in Lebanon just a couple of years ago, Israel knocked out a UN installation. Put a watchtower and a couple of UN guards on it, but, oh, we goofed. Gee whiz, I'm sorry. We made a mistake there and hit the headquarters of the UN Refugee Agency. This is the UN Refugee Agency was on fire today after coming under attack as Israeli forces pushed deeper into Gaza City. This is from The Guardian, unleashing the heaviest shelling of densely packed neighborhoods since the military operation began nearly 3 weeks ago. 3 weeks this has been going on. And what's been the statement from the United States government? Pretty much nothing. Pretty much same old, same old. Secretary of State that was, well, a state to State Department, I said a long time ago, they should have just cleaned out the desk and stored corn in it because that's all it was good for, is the huge State Department complex. State Departments have achieved nothing in this administration. But here we have this carnage going on for 3 weeks now, and the United States government sitting by and doing nothing. And so the Israelis bombed the UN Refugee Agency. And UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon expressed strong protest and outrage and demanded an investigation into why there was an attack on the compound of the UN Relief and Works Agency. And so it's not like it's a secret to anybody. This is a well-known location in Gaza marked with blue UN flags. You've seen the UN flags. They're unmistakable. And we now have the number of casualties in Gaza over 1,000. And the local UN officials have reached an unbearable point. So there's an Israeli envoy who arrived in Cairo today to take part in Egyptian brokered talks on a possible ceasefire. But you can bet on this. There will be no ceasefire in Gaza until Israel has gotten their way or run out of gas, one or the other. And I don't think they will. They're not meeting much resistance right now. Some. But they will achieve their objectives there, and they will keep going until they do, or until such time as the people are able to fight back enough to inflict enough casualties on them or world opinion against them. A UN warehouse containing tons of relief supplies was burning. Relief supplies. After the compound was hit by what UN spokesman Chris Guinness said, get this, hit by white phosphorus shells. Illegal. Illegal. White phosphorus shells. Even in warfare, all is not fair in love and war. There are things you cannot do, and you cannot use white phosphorus shells except to use as a smoke screen. That's all they're legal for in international rules of engagement. UN personnel injured, and there were 700 local people who had taken shelter inside of this shelter. And so they had to suspend their relief operations. They were held up, but not really suspended permanently. But the head of the UN operations in Gaza said this is going to burn down the entire warehouse. Thousands and thousands of tons of food, medical supplies, and other emergency assistance is in there. He said, and we all know this, the phosphorus fires were hard to extinguish because if you put water on it, it just generates toxic fumes and does nothing to stop the burning. Have you ever seen a human being when some of this phosphorus gets on them? And the article mentions that phosphorus munitions are banned under international law as a weapon, but permitted if used to create a smoke screen. UN head Ban said he had demanded a full explanation from Israel's foreign minister, Tzipi Livni, and the defense minister, Barak. And the defense minister, Ban said, told him it was a grave mistake and he took it very seriously. And he was assured that extra attention will be paid to UN facilities and this will not be repeated. Of course, the Israelis came along and denied saying that. Reuters reported that a missile or shell had struck the Gaza Tower block where it and other media organizations have offices. Get the press out of there. Get the press out of there. That's an objective of the Israelis. They want no press in there to see what goes on. So here they are closing in on the outskirts of Gaza City. They bombed 70 sites overnight, forced thousands of more Palestinians to get out of their homes. Hopefully this is something that's maybe they're putting their best effort forward right before they end this. Hopefully that'll be it. But I'm very disappointed that the American government has not gotten involved, has not done hardly a damn thing about it. It's very disappointing. We're going to take a break right after this. Well, we'll take a break right now.
All the other girls here are stars. You are the Northern Lights. They try to shine through your curtain. You're too close and too bright. trace of a pale imitation of you. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. This party was made with the night air and the chance at a smile. We'll wipe its way from your face to one of the boys in your line. You act like you're hip to their tricks and you're strong, but a virgin, words that her heart never once had a song. I'll be the one to drive you back home, Kathleen. And I'll have you back by break of day. I'm going your way anyway. If you'd like to come along, I'll be yours for a song. Ooh, oh, oh.
It truthfully. I will answer it absolutely truthfully. I dare you to, the challenge is to defend my statements about Israel, because after all they're doing is defending themselves. Let me ask you a question. You have the right to defend yourself. No one would deny that. I wouldn't deny the Israelis the right to defend themselves. You got a kid across the street, lives across the street from you, and he's got a pellet gun or a BB gun, and he shoots out several of the windows of your house and causes damage, causes distress in your house. Should you go get a bunch of dynamite and blow his house all to hell and kill his family? Should you? Is that defending yourself? I think that's overdoing it. And we've seen that time after time after time after time. So, I don't know what to say to the email other than that. It's excessive. It's out of line. It's against UN resolutions. Been more UN resolutions against Israel than any other country. They have never acquiesced to a single one of them that I know of. And the United States has been right there defending them on all of them. I don't know. Something's not quite right about that, if you ask me. Not quite right about that. Well, we're going to be pausing for news at the top of the hour. Kind of a laid-back day here on the Guy James Show. Our last show until we head off to Washington, D.C. on Sunday. We'll be packing our little bags and getting out of here, making sure we take all the right equipment and all that. I'm hoping not to forget anything this time, because it might be one of those deals where it's even impossible to stop in a drugstore or a Radio Shack and buy anything you need. There might be so many people there. I don't know. We'll see. Well, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more of this laid-back, kinder, gentler Guy James Show today. Stay with us, won't you, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Is the third time a charm? House Democrats think so, pushing through the twice-vetoed S-CHIP bill, counting on President Barack Obama to sign it. Jesse Russell reports.
After a heated debate on the floor of Congress, House Democrats won passage for the third time of a bill that will expand government-sponsored health care to 4 million children of poor families. The bill passed 289 to 139 and is an expansion of the state children's health insurance program. Outgoing President George W. Bush has twice vetoed a similar bill. Democrats made it clear that this bill, one of the first orders of business for the newly emboldened Democratic Congress, is an opening salvo in their fight for some form of universal health care. California Representative Henry Waxman.
This bill is a down payment on health care for all Americans, but at least we will start covering millions of low-income children.
Washington Representative Jim McDermott said health care is a right and not a privilege.
This legislation affirms the commitment of the new Congress to serve all the people, not merely those of means who can pay any price for health care, while the nation pays a steep price for not covering its children.
Creation of a single-payer universal health care system in the U.S. would create 2.6 million jobs. That's according to a study from the California Nurses Association. The union says establishing national single-payer health care would be a major economic stimulus, infusing $317 billion in new business and public revenues and $100 billion in wages into the U.S. economy. The study says the current total spent on health care in the U.S. is $2.1 trillion. Expanding Medicare to deliver health care for all in the U.S. would add $62 billion to that figure, much less than the cost of the Wall Street bailout. The study was done by the Institute for Health and Socioeconomic Policy, a research arm of the California Nurses Association. American Rights at Work is launching a $3 million TV ad campaign today supporting the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform.
The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to join a union to earn better pay, health benefits, and job security. The Employee Free Choice Act. It's time the economy worked for everyone again.
A Hart Research Associates poll found 73% of adults support the Employee Free Choice Act. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Americans aren't buying. For the sixth straight month, sales at U.S. retailers have fallen. It is the longest decline since the Commerce Department began tracking the data in 1992. Inventory at U.S. retailers are also down, dropping by 0.7% in November. The price of goods imported to the United States have declined for their fifth straight month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life you give me is my creation! Life!
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You can count down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yeah. Back with you here on the Guy James Show. We were talking about heading out to Washington this weekend. I talk too much about that, don't I? There's something about that town. I just love that place. Just love that place. I would love to go there and live for a few years. Just, I don't want to work. I don't know. I don't want to have to work while I'm, well, maybe in a good government job some kind, or good media job. But, no, I just want to be able to walk around and learn more of the history of the place and experience, you know, and just take it all in. I've done a lot of that, but I do love it. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us. 866-546-5254. We were talking a few minutes ago, and I got a couple of emails during the break about my comments about the harping and carping starting on starting in on Barack Obama already by the right and some on the left, and we'll never be completely happy with anybody, but the crazies have started out after him on the right-hand side of the political spectrum. Already mentioned Diaper David Vitter. But some of the things going on behind the scenes, Max Blumenthal, I don't know if you know Max, but Max is quite a guy. And Max wrote a little article about some of the wackies on the right and some things they're doing already. It's like they're trying to put a curse on him or something. He said, you'll never believe how a Christian right congressman and two anti-abortion protesters have prepared the Capitol for the Obama inauguration. On January 7th, second-term Republican Representative Paul Bruhn of Georgia and two friends prayed over a door. It was not just any door, but the entranceway beneath the Capitol that President-elect Barack Obama will pass through as he walks onto the inaugural stage to take the oath of office. I have been in and out of that door. In fact, I got a picture of it right here in front of me right now that it took. And that's the door that will be coming out of. So this guy and his two pals there are praying over that door, the one Obama will pass through. And they said, this congressman said, I hope and pray that as God stirs the heart of our new president, that President Obama will listen and will heed God's direction, Bruhn proclaimed. Standing beside Bruhn, Reverend Patrick Mahoney launched in a prayer into a prayerful originally delivered by Billy Graham at Richard Nixon's inauguration in 1969, quote, for too long we have neglected thy word and ignored thy laws, Mahoney preached. We have sowed to the wind and are now reaping a whirlwind of crime, division, and rebellion. And now with the wages of sin staring us in the face, we remember thy words. Can I have an amen? Yes. While Mahoney prayed, Reverend Bob Schenck, isn't that a name, Schenck, turned his palms to the sky and muttered, "Yes, and have mercy," over and over again. Have mercy. Then he dipped his fingers in a jar of oil and painted several crosses on the door's brass framing, quote, "as they did the furnishings of the tabernacle in the temple to the use of God and His word," he prayed. So there's an officer from the Capitol Police Department standing immediately on the other side of the door, keeping watch over the inaugural stage that they've got all built and ready to go now, just about finished up. In fact, they've had a rehearsal on it, not with the real people. I don't know why they did a rehearsal without the real people. But they're keeping watch, the Capitol Police are, over the inaugural stage, a top security concern for both his department and Secret Service. With his back turned to the door, the officer appeared unaware of the secret ceremony Brune, Mahoney, and Schenck were performing just feet away. So whether security officials gave authorization for the ceremony is unclear. Neither the Capitol Police nor Secret Service returned any calls about it. And Representative Brune's office also refused to respond to any request for comment about the anointing. While the Capitol prayer partners appeared earnest in the prayers for the president-elect's success, they have each distinguished themselves from their Christian right comrades by leveling some of the most paranoid statements that Obama has faced since he arrived in the Senate. On November 10th, 2008, a week after Obama's election victory, now remember this, this is the United States Congressman took umbrage at the president-elect's call for a national civilian security force, a proposal also backed by George W. Bush. And according to Brune, who acknowledged the possibility that he might be crazy, that Obama might be crazy, Obama has revealed himself as a radical Marxist Nazi socialist comparable to Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin. Brune said, "It may sound a bit crazy and off base, but the thing is, he's the one who proposed this national security force. I'm just trying to bring attention to the fact that we may not, I hope not, but we may have a problem with the type of philosophy of radical socialism or Marxism." That's exactly what Hitler did in Nazi Germany, and it's exactly what the Soviet Union did. When he's proposing to have a national security force, that's answering to him. That is as strong as the U.S. military. He's showing me signs of being a Marxist. Well, Representative Brune and his pals Schenck and Mahoney had their little prayer deal out there, and they've got that doorway all blessed and all that now. This Schenck, oh my, this Schenck guy, now imagine this, he's with a United States congressman doing this bizarre little ritual at this door. In the early 1990s, I didn't know he had this background. Schenck was arrested a dozen times during protests outside women's health clinics and abortion doctors' home, and was momentarily detained by Secret Service after shoving an aborted fetus in front of Bill Clinton outside the 1992 Democratic National Convention. Who would do that? 4 years later, Schenck grew so upset by President Clinton's veto of a bill banning partial abortion that he managed to creep behind him during a Christmas Eve service at the National Cathedral and whisper in his ear, "God will hold you to account, Mr. President." He was immediately removed from the chapel and interrogated by Secret Service agents. You mean to tell me someone actually walked up behind the president in the National Cathedral at a Christmas Eve service and the Secret Service let him go? That's hard to believe. It really is. It's hard to believe they got near the man. I had never heard that before. Wow. All they did was remove him from the chapel and talk to him a little bit and let him go. The schnick spent several months in 1992 picketing the Buffalo, New York home of Dr. Barnett Slipian, an obscure area abortion doctor that he personally targeted for scorn. So he's been at this a long time, and he's done a lot of crazy stuff. But the important thing is here, he's a friend of a United States congressman from Georgia. Oh, boy. There's one in every crowd. Unfortunately, there's far more than one in every radicals crowd. Found an interesting little bit in the news today about Joe Biden. You know the story about Joe taking the train home to Delaware every night since he's been, almost every night since he's been in the United States Senate, back to his wife and family. Politico is reporting on that, that Joe, of course, he's never cared much for Washington and the socializing and everything that goes on there. So he and his wife, Jill, this is going to be something different. Joe Biden and his wife, Jill, will be more like part-time residents of the brick Victorian vice presidential home at the Naval Observatory than second families before them. They expect to return home frequently on weekends, taking the Amtrak whenever they can. Now, that's going to be fun for the Secret Service. The Biden's relationship with Washington is shaping up to be of the one-foot-in, one-foot-out sort. Joe and Jill Biden seem intent on shaping their new roles to fit their lifestyle however they can, rather than having the traditions of the vice presidency mold them. And as part of her husband's transition, Jill Biden, who teaches English at a Delaware community college, will move her career to D.C., but after entertaining officers from some no doubt prestigious four-year schools in the Washington area, she decided to select a community college as her new workplace. She's still figuring out which one. Even the Secret Service had to adjust, staffing Amtrak trips and erecting guard shacks at the Biden's Delaware home. I think that's nice. I do. And I got to tell you, I really like Joe Biden. I like Joe Biden a lot. A whole lot. What's this going on in the news here about a U.S. Airways flight from New York to LaGuardia to Charlotte? Don't know exactly. Maybe he got in the water. Who? 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the Guy James Show today. We will be back in a minute.
Every weekday, bring all my friends. figure out a way to get rid of money. But isn't it funny how much we all love money? Well,
we were, but we're not anymore. We may be getting somewhere now. We'll soon know, won't we? We will. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the program today, and we hope you will. What an amazing rescue effort taking place in the Hudson River just off of 50th Street in Washington, D.C., between the tunnel and 50th. That plane landed in the Hudson River And they're saying that it was that it struck a flock of geese, landed in the Hudson River, and everybody survived. Can that be? If it is, that's some kind of a miracle, some kind of a real miracle that everybody would survive. That's just hard to imagine. Frigid water and horrible conditions, but fortunately, whole bunch of ferry boats and Coast Guard, everybody else out there, and there are people walking away from it. It's just hard. It's hard to imagine that plane landed in the water. It took off from LaGuardia. Amazing. Headed for Charlotte. So it appears that maybe there were some no injuries reported. Oh, that can that possibly be? Oh, I hope that's true. Oh, I hope that's true. Man, oh man, that's quite a story. It'll be interesting to hear the human interest story that comes out of that from the folks that were on that plane to land in the water. That must be some pilot that brought that plane down in the water without getting a bunch of passengers injured or killed. Incredible. Incredible story. 866-546-5254. Mr. Cheney was at it again. Mr. Lehrer was interviewing Mr. Cheney, and of course, as he always does, he wouldn't admit to anything doing anything wrong. Mr. Lehrer said the president has also said that he made some mistakes in the last 8 years. Did you make any? He asked of Cheney, and Cheney said, "Well, make mistakes. I can think of places where I underestimated things. For example, talking about Iraq, the extent of which the Iraqi population had been beaten down by Saddam Hussein was greater than I had anticipated. That is, we thought that the Iraqis would be able to bounce back fairly quickly once Saddam was gone or the new government established and step up and take major responsibilities for governing Iraq, building a military, and so forth. That took longer than I expected." That took longer than you expected. Let's see. We go in with massive military strikes. We blow up half the country. We get old Saddam and hang him so hard that people said he's, well, never mind. They went out and looted everything in the street, and remember Rumsfeld said, well, you know, freedom isn't tidy or isn't neat or whatever. And the libraries, all that stuff. But we did protect the oil fields. yes, there's no mistakes. No mistakes. Well, he just wouldn't say it, would he? And why am I not surprised? I certainly hope we don't see him again either. Will he pop back up back at Halliburton or some such place? I mean, Lord knows he's got enough money. Money is not a problem for Dick Cheney. Will he pop back up at Halliburton or be a CEO of another company or be on the boards of a half a dozen of them, some of the military-industrial complex? I would expect that he will be. He's not that old. How old is Cheney? I don't know for sure. 72? 71? I'm not sure. But, you know, he got a brand new electric ticker here a while back, got all these electric deals going on in his body, so he might be good for quite a few years yet. We can only hope, huh? Talking about the economy, which we haven't mentioned too much today, they have an annual get-together, the retail CEOs get together after Christmas every year in New York City. And usually brag about how well they did over the Christmas holidays and how well they did for the entire year. They got together this year, and it was pretty bad news, the worst year that they've, Christmas season in 40 years. But as is typical of a group like that, several of the CEOs said they were deeply worried about the Employee Free Choice Act. Wouldn't you know? A piece of legislation that would amend the National Labor Relations Act to make it easier for unions to organize. Now, God knows we don't want unions to have it easy to organize. We wouldn't want that. We would want to protect those that intimidate union organizing efforts. Oh, yes. The intimidation that comes from the companies when a union organization drive starts, the intimidation is massive. Massive. I know. I've been there. They will do everything they possibly can to keep a union out. And of course, the prime example of it right now is Walmart. Walmart has shut down places where a union was trying to get in. I was once told that at a place where I worked many, many, many moons ago, that if a union gets in here, you guys won't have a job. We'll move this out of here in the middle of the night and before you'll even know it's gone. We were told that. Called into a room by the vice president of a company and told a large company. Well, I'll tell you who it was. It was the Timken Company. Timken Roller Bearing Company. The intimidation that went on there of unions, and many of their plants were unionized, but this happened to be one of the places that was not. And man, did they put up an effort. Oh, did they put up an effort to keep the union out. And they were successful. They were successful. At a time when probably union organization is needed more so than any time in the last quarter century, certainly. They want to make it difficult, if not impossible, to keep unions out of these retail places. And I can't think of too many places where they need them more. So that's what came of their post-Christmas meeting this year, the retail CEOs. I see the official Guy James Show Yorkies have walked in. The door just outside the studio. I've got the studio door open, and Kukla and Sophie are out there today, just kind of lounging around. I tell you. Did want to take a look at the stock market. The last I looked, it was just about even out for the day. Just pretty much even, so it has been headed down the last few days, and we don't have a bright economic outlook right now, that's for certain. But we are looking, what are you looking for after the inauguration next week? I hope you're not expecting miracles real quick. I hope everybody has patience. That's the one thing right now. I know we're hurting. I know the country's hurting. The economy is hurting. People have lost their jobs. People are don't have enough money for mortgages. I know we're hurting. But this is a time right now that we've got to somehow, and I believe the path to this somehow is to help each other. That's what I'm committed to this year, helping each other. We will pull through if we help each other. And we will find a way through this. I know we will. And we've just got to stick together, huddle together, and help each other, and have a little patience. Because it's not going to happen overnight. It just is not going to happen overnight. And I think everybody that's expecting an overnight miracle, we're going to have an inauguration, and all of a sudden the sun's going to come out, and the grass is going to be green, and there's going to be two chickens in every pot, and you know that old story. Did you, Frank? Oh my word! I'm looking on the chat room, and I hope he hears this. My friend Frank. My goodness. don't often... Yes, Frank, indeed, hello. Frank and I have done some time in Washington, D.C. together. In fact, I think I may have introduced him to this political stuff that goes on in Washington, D.C. Oh, good to see you, Frank. Good to see from you. Good to see you. A good guy. And by the way, check out the Frank Factor. Frank, I hope you'll post your info on there so people can see your site and what you're doing right now. It's pretty cool. Very cool. Frank's an interesting guy. The music that we play, let me just hit this, that we play, you know, is our some of our intros and this right here. It's called Holy Felon. It's got words to it as well. We just play the instrumental version on here. Yeah. Frank's responsible for that. How about that, huh? Very, very fine musician. So, hello, Frank. And, yeah, check out the Frank Factor. That's a pretty cool thing. It's good to see him right here on the Head On Radio Network chat room. That is a fact. Best wishes to Frank and family. What a surprise. Anyway, we were talking about the economy and all that, and I, Johnny said he wants three chickens in his pot while listening to the Dixie Chicks. Oh, yeah. Johnny was a big Dixie, a chick fan. I am too. I like the Chicks. I used to have a program here on local terrestrial radio, as you know, and they got rid of me because they don't like anybody with a liberal point of view. And I guess you all know by now that that's exactly where my point of view goes, is liberal and to the left. It's point straight left. Not far left, but left. And it really gets me that, you know, this radio station that has these clowns on, Glenn Beck, and followed up by Limbaugh, followed up by Hannity, followed up by, what's that crazy lawyer? Mark Levin, followed by Michael Savage. Need I say more? I think Dennis Prager's on there, too. But this Savage character is about more than I can stomach. And what I wonder is, do some of these people like this Savage and this Glenn Beck, do they do what they do just for the, I don't know, the wow factor or whatever it is? Do they? Do they do that? Do they really believe what they say? And the reason I bring this up is Michael Savage had, well, he was talking about Joseph Cal, Republican congressman from Louisiana, who fled Vietnam at the age of 8 after the fall of Saigon, and this came from Think Progress, to become the first Vietnamese-American to serve in Congress. You know, I'm awfully proud of that. Aren't you? I know a lot of you are. I think that's a wonderful thing. And so, Michael Savage gets on the radio and says that political refugees who've never used a telephone, a toothbrush, or toilet paper come to the U.S. and bring their destitute ways to this country, and they never assimilate. And their children become gangbangers, Savage added. Cal condemned the statement as racist and repulsive, and I do as well. Cal said, I have assimilated, and assimilated well, I believe. He said he'd never used a toilet before coming to America. He came here when he was only 8. It's despicable that a man like a Michael Savage, for money, we'll get on and say that. And so, of course, so he gets on the radio Tuesday and defended his remarks, restating it now, not apologizing, saying that most refugees, particularly from certain countries, do not assimilate to the United States. Savage says, we're arguing over a junior congressman from Louisiana, Republican at that, who is already attacking Michael Savage for saying what I believe to be true, which is that most refugees who come here, particularly from certain countries, do not assimilate to this nation. All I have to do is have you go back and go look around the mall. You'll see many 14-year-olds pushing carriages with two babies because it's a meal ticket for them. The Savage is a nasty piece of work. I know many people from, not many, I've known many people from Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and other parts of that part of the world who've assimilated very nicely to this country. And the fact that Savage would say that on the air, it's just indicative of Michael Savage. He's a creep. He's a bottom feeder amongst radio people. Sensationalism, that's what he's after. He can't get it any other way. So he comes up with sensationalistic talk. If he means it, that's even worse. Don't know if he does or not, but he'll do anything for a buck, evidently. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for a break and be back in just a couple of minutes.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one. See what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one, pulverize them. Age is crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. Build an all-American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, we'll just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby, and tie your shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Hey, we're back here on the Guy James Show, and right now let's head on over to the radio. We have Betsy from the Lone Star State. Welcome, Betsy, to the Guy James Show. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Guy. I had to call in. I work in a local school system here in Texas, and I have been working with immigrants and refugees for 20 years, and I'm absolutely appalled at what I just heard on your program.
Well, it's true, and he said it, and he doesn't back down from it and says he means it, you know?
I have never seen anyone more hardworking, more willing to work for an education than the refugees that I work with.
Many times, am I wrong here? Many times you will see them go right to the top of their class after they've assimilated a little bit and win honors and all sorts of awards. That's been my experience.
I would say often, but what what we do see with a lot of the kids who are coming in from other countries, especially the ones who did not have a chance for a real education where they were, is an appreciation for what is offered them here. An absolute respect for the teachers, for the learning process, for in a way that a lot of our American kids, quite frankly, don't have.
Well, we've taken it for granted, and they have not. Do you find that their parents have contributed to that attitude? They want their kids to get into school and have something they never had?
Very often, yes. A lot of times, and one of the things that I'm involved with is parent education, because quite a few of the parents don't understand how the school system works, from whether it's the importance of daily attendance or how the grading system works, how the calendar works, how kids move from one grade to the next, any of those kinds of things. The parents, once they have that education, are very, very willing to do what they can for their kids to be successful.
Mm. That's
a lot of my students also work. I've had full classes of eighth graders, an eighth grade class where half of my students had jobs.
What has been your experience with the age groups? What age groups across the parameter of the whole thing have you been involved with over
from
the years?
From preschool up through high school, everything.
Oh.
I've worked with all ages.
And primarily, when we talk about immigrants and refugees, what cross-section are we looking at most of all here?
Well, in Texas, I would say it really depends on where you are, but the majority of our immigrants here are from Mexico. Our refugees, I work in a school that serves a zip code. Our attendance area includes three different apartment complexes that the refugee organizations have contracts with. And so when the kids are in their 2 years being supported by the refugee organizations and the churches and everybody who is helping them out, they tend to live in this area, which is why I'm at the school I'm at.
And how long have you been
there? And those are African, primarily. We get some Cubans, and primarily these days, students from West Africa.
Really? West Africa?
Yes. We had quite a few Iranians for a while. Almost all of them are now in work-study programs where they attend high school for half the day and work probably another 8 hours in addition to 3 or 4 hours of high school.
Oh.
We only have two of the Iranian students left at our school, but at one point we had about 11. We also have gotten quite a few Burmese students, and the Burmese students are coming in with much less of a formal education than most of our other kids.
The students from Iran,
yes.
Did they have a decent formal educational background?
Almost all of them, yes.
Yes. That country's far more developed than a lot of people think it is.
Yes, and then we even had a student come in who was in special education who came in with her IEP in Farsi, had her education plan and everything about what her level of reading, her level of math, what her disabilities were, everything in Farsi, but all typed out, and we had to get someone to translate it.
What a
and
story.
And we were able to put her into a special education class here, and she's doing beautifully.
What percentage of kids that come to you have much English at all?
Almost none.
Almost none?
Almost none. Less than 10%.
The young ones, how long does it take to pick up the language?
The younger they are, well, it's very hard to say. By picking up the language, if you mean, we make a big distinction between social English and academic English.
Yeah.
Social English almost always comes first.
Yes.
but we our kids who come from India and Pakistan, very in both of those countries, they use English textbooks from about sixth grade on. So if we're getting students who are 10th, 11th, 12th grade in their country, they have been reading chemistry and geography in English, even though their spoken English is not as good.
Let me ask you, do you find any of these students, and I would say particularly my interest here in students from Iran, do you find any of these people educationally above where American kids at the same age are?
Absolutely. I would say that the students who come from Europe, a number of the students who come from India, and some of the African students. We had a few kids come in from Ghana. Well, they're Liberian, but they had been in boarding school in Ghana during the civil war in Liberia. And they came in with their math and science and writing skills far superior to any of the kids here, as well as their French skills. And they were able to do credit by exam and place out of quite a few classes.
Do you?
On the other hand, nobody outside of the United States comes in with the understanding of fractions that we expect from high school students in algebra. And I am almost always doing mini lessons on how to read graphs for social studies classes and science classes, and mini lessons on the use of fractions in algebra.
You have an explanation for that?
Percent. Those are things that many, many kids, no matter how educated they are, from outside of the United States, don't understand the same way we understand. Not that they don't have a concept of it, but they don't do it in a way where they would understand what the teacher is doing at the board.
Why? I find that interesting. I really do.
Those are even the kids who come in with the most advanced skills, those are two areas that we're almost always remediating.
Why?
Some kids, those are the only two.
Why some of the kids you mentioned come in at a higher level of education than kids of the same age here in this country? What do you attribute that to?
I think that the European education models are more advanced than ours.
Public education?
Yes.
And
although
what?
These two boys that I'm thinking of who were in school in Ghana were in religious school.
And why would the public educational system be more advanced than ours?
Standards, education, standards, expectations.
Hmm. Do you think we've lowered our standards in the last couple of decades?
Absolutely.
I agree.
If you look at a textbook from 100 years ago, from 8th grade, you and I would have trouble passing it.
Mm.
Passing the exam.
We have this deal in Florida here where they have these standardized tests that all the teachers do complain that all they get to do is teach kids to take this test. They don't get to teach them to learn.
I hear that all the time.
Yeah. Many teachers here in Florida, and I know a few, they complain to me that that's all they do is prepare kids for this test so they can pass that test so the school can get a certain mark for the kids passing this test, and they feel as though they've taught them nothing except...
We've had our first high schools in this area close because they went 3 or 4 years without enough students passing the test. And the way that Texas is set up at the moment, this may be national, but it might be Texas, the class of 2012, we have to reach 100% on certain measures. And we can't reach 100% on anything.
100%? Yeah.
The class of 2012 has to achieve 100% on, I'm not sure if it's the reading exit test or which test it is. But
well,
I can tell you right now, we won't get there.
We need kids to learn how to think. It just seems preposterous to me that we've headed in that direction, just trying to make it so schools can survive. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Is it money?
I think money is a small part of it. I think that changing the national priorities is a big part of it. I actually think that teaching kids to think at a young age would probably keep more of them interested in learning at an older age rather than tuning out.
Oh, there's nothing more satisfying than when you're young and you're learning and you're catching on and it's just, you know, this whole world coming up in front of your eyes. It's an exciting, wondrous experience if you get to experience it, and I wish more kids did. Betsy, thanks so much for calling in about this today.
I don't call your I don't call any of the shows regularly, but
well, I know you don't, but
listening today and just.
Yeah, I'm
like I had to call in.
I'm outraged by that, but then again, it's Michael Savage, so what can I say? This is a preposterous statement, but, you know, there are people that believe it, unfortunately, and I'm glad you called in and gave us the truth on it. You've been there, you've done that, and
I've been doing it for 20 years, and a I have a lot of success stories. Our graduation rate among refugees, our graduation rate among immigrants who come in seventh grade or beyond, I'm not proud of either of those numbers, but we do have some success stories, and we are trying, we are doing the best that we can, many of us. Unfortunately, not all of the teachers, and unfortunately a lot of the kids have other priorities.
Well, I can tell you have pride in what you do and a great interest in what you do. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard me say it or not, but to me, the most valuable people in this country are teachers. And the most maligned people in many cases are teachers, underpaid, overworked in a lot of cases. I mean, there's some good teachers and bad teachers, but nobody's more valuable than a teacher. Nobody.
I agree.
Not a physician, not a chemist, not anybody. Because you are taking care of the most precious resource we have, I should do a whole show on it because I think it's a travesty the way teachers, many great teachers, are taken care of in this country. I look back at when I was in school, and I've got some teachers that changed my life, and I'll never forget them. And they were special people because they taught me to love to learn, and that's so important.
I think that's the most important thing, and I think that's what's missing at our elementary level, is we are so busy teaching skills that we don't teach the love of learning.
Yeah. Well, Betsy, thanks so much for calling. We got to head out of
You're
here.
You're out of time.
And I really, really appreciate it, if we get to talking about the educational system again, please do call because your knowledge of that is very valuable and very much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Bye. Quick story. I had a niece, my only niece, moved to Texas. What am I saying? Moved to Phoenix, Arizona this year. Got her first teaching job. Kindergarten. A difficult assignment. First time out as a teacher.